Radio St. Pete presents Typewriter Talks with Maureen McDowell, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit.
Hello, welcome to Typewriter Talks. This podcast features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. My name is Maureen McDowell, and I'm the founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. On Typewriter Talks, we discuss all kinds of writerly topics, hoping to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Today, we are happy to welcome Brian Petcash. Brian grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, a focal point of much of his writing and much of his sports heartache. A former high school literature and creative writing teacher, he lives in Tampa with his partner, Celeste, and works as a marketing professional in both the game and comic book industries. Brian holds an MFA in creative writing from the University of Tampa. His work has appeared in El Portal, Bridge 8 Literary Magazine, Southward, and Midwestern Gothic. Mistakes by the Lake, his collection of stories published by Madville Publishing, is out now. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks so much, Maureen, for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm grateful to be here, looking forward to chatting with you about writing. And, you know, I'm just a huge fan of Keep St. Pete Lit, and I think you just had your 10th anniversary.
Is that yes, right? Yes, it's crazy.
Yeah, so happy anniversary on that too.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we did not have a Typewriter Talks podcast last week because coincidentally, Brian and I both had father emergencies. Both of our fathers were having health issues. So I'm glad that you were able to meet with me today and talk about your writing process.
Yeah,
so
me too.
Tell us what you're working on right now.
So right now, I just a few weeks ago finished the first draft of a novel I've been working on for years, literally years. Probably I've been working on it for 5, 6, 7 years, somewhere in there. So I'm super excited to be at the revision stage at this point.
Can you tell us anything about the novel, or is it top secret?
No, I'm happy to share. Like my short story collection, Mistakes by the Lake, it's a piece set 95% in Cleveland, Ohio. It's December 1994. A 14-year-old Rose Sharp is deaf and trying to make her way into the world. She stumbles across a fallen and unconscious Moses Rockovitz, and she sets out to help the former disc jockey, but instead finds that Mo Rock has a connection to her father that she must uncover. I think it's a story about longing, about loss, about human connection. It's a story about rock and roll that pulls heavily from the musical roots that grow under Cleveland and the rich history of music and the import of music in our lives.
So how'd you get the idea for this? Did you like hear the characters' voices, or was it as something that you wanted to write about for a while?
It started with seeing of who became my main character on the side of the road. I just saw this person who had set up some signs to protest the lottery. And I just started thinking in my head, what could that character be like? And I kind of grew from there.
Protest the lottery. What do you mean, protest the lottery?
I believe he felt he should have been paid out, and he was not paid out.
Wow. Don't we all?
Yeah.
Don't we all? That's funny. So he that character inspired you.
It did, yes.
Isn't that interesting, like how stories are formed in your brain? Like all of a sudden they just like appear. And I think as we get further along our writer's journey, we know, oh, this is something I need to chase. This is
mm-hmm.
It's a
person I saw probably 15 years ago and thought at the time, I want to do something with that guy, and just never really sat down to write about it until 6, 7 years ago. And here we are. And really the only thing that's consistent is my guy too thinks the lottery owes him money. But other than that, it's a complete, you know, I riffed where it went.
How come you keep going back to Cleveland? Because now you live in Tampa. How long have you lived in Tampa?
23 years.
Oh my goodness. So explain.
I know.
I mean, Cleveland's like a muse for you.
It is. I don't know why. It's just really in my heart and my blood and my mind. And I just, I find writing about it fascinating. I haven't quite made the leap to Tampa, though I hope to maybe once I get this novel put to bed.
Yeah, maybe then Tampa will start talking to you. Boy,
Yeah.
Florida is a gift that keeps on giving, that's for sure.
In many ways.
That's so interesting. So tell us what a typical day looks like for you as a writer.
I don't have a typical writing schedule. I just haven't been able to do that. I have a day job where I do sales and marketing. I also have been teaching a writing class at the University of Tampa. So during the week, not much writing is happening, unfortunately. And I used to be really hard on myself about that lack of daily writing, because writers always hear that admonition slash directive that to be a real writer, you have to write every day. And heck, I think back in 2010, I was teaching a high school creative writing class, and I'm pretty sure I gave that same specious advice to my students.
Yeah.
And for a short time after that, I actually, because I'd say that to them and wasn't doing it myself, I decided to do as I say, so I could honestly tell my students that I heeded my own advice. So for about a month, I think, I got up around 5:30 each morning to do some writing before school, but I just couldn't sustain that. So
Wow.
now I don't technically write every day. Actual writing typically occurs for me on the weekends. But I do count throughout the week. I'll be reading books, like things that I'm researching, other novels. I'll be doing some revision sometimes. So I kind of consider any act that is helping me with a particular piece as quote unquote working on my writing. And I do try to do one of those things each day. Perhaps I'm fooling myself with that, but sometimes I feel we writers need to fool ourselves a little, at least I do.
No, I totally agree with that. Like I have days where I'm actually living the writing, whether I'm reading a book or living an experience or living a poem. Like a poem might not be finished, and then I'm like, well, maybe I need to live this poem a little bit and then refer back to it. I
Yeah,
think that
totally.
if you are a writer, I would definitely go on record saying that we're always writing. Like if we're con like there is like where you're just not getting to the page and you're not writing and you're, a stifled writer or whatever term you want to use. But I think that if you're consciously, intentionally working on your writing, you're always writing. And I would agree with that because I'll be reading a book of nonfiction and a line will come and that will inspire a piece of writing or inform another piece of writing. So,
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's not like I'm not thinking about the story every day. I'm not thinking about the characters every day. I'm not thinking about the theme I'm trying to convey every day. It's always working in my head on some level.
yeah, and I mean, like, whatever works. I mean,
Yeah.
no real rules. As long as you get something down on the page eventually, I think that's
Eventually,
okay.
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's people that have written only one book and, Frankenstein. Like that book, she was 19 and it's like that's her most famous work. And it's like, sometimes it's maybe there's one book in you, or maybe there's 40, but maybe those 40 books don't come until you're 70. Like, never know. You never know.
There's
So tell us
no
about,
rules. Yeah,
there's
I
no
agree.
rules. That's the fun part. So, tell us how your writing process has changed over the years.
I'd say I've gotten more into research, which could also be called procrastinating. But when I start writing about Cleveland and I want the city to be as much of a character as the characters, I really want the historical aspects of the city and what's going on at the time to be kind of key elements of the story. So I do a lot of research for this particular novel, because I think music is such an integral part of it. I've been reading a lot of books about the history of music, the history of rock and roll, the impact of music psychologically on people. So I think research has come more into play. I think I used to just wing it completely, but I find that research really helps feed my imagination as much as anything. But otherwise, it hasn't changed much. I still write everything by hand. At first, almost exclusively without a clear a direction of where I'm going. I kind of made my own narrow lined paper with a double wide left margin that gives me room to make notes and comments and ideas as I write.
I love that.
I refer to those notes a lot when I'm drafting. And then, I'll type in those handwritten pages and I revise a little bit as I type. So that's kind of like draft 1.5. And then I'll just revise, looking at the overall flow, the analytical aspects of plot and character, looking for opportunities to expand or contract, to see what a piece can become. So I think how it's changed has been, I think I've gotten more into research, and maybe that's just the type of stuff I'm working on right now.
Yeah.
But as far as the process goes, I still handwrite, I still type in and then revise from there.
So what is I handwrite a lot of my poetry, but the essays I've been doing have been more voice to dictating it. Dictation, yeah, because I can't type as fast as I think. And I can talk out kind of the essay. I write my column for the Artisan Magazine the same way. Like any kind of like prose form that I'm doing, I really don't even bother typing because I don't do it fast enough. But poetry, I'm always usually writing it by hand. Unless it's the middle of the night, then I'll try to like get it down. But it just doesn't flow the same with the typing. But what do you see the benefits for writing by hand? Because I love when I hear writers do that.
I just feel I connect to the work more when I do that. I also, when I if I type directly into the computer, I have the tendency to backspace and delete and to correct things as I go. And when I write by hand, I'm really not doing that. And if I do, I'll scratch one line through what I've written, so it's still there for me to see when I go back to it. So I like seeing the creative process of how sentences and words came out and how characters are developing. And I like seeing the revisions sort of happening sometimes in process. Because otherwise, if I do it while typing, I lose all that information because I just feel compelled to delete and backspace and correct.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and it is cool to see the creative process, and it's almost like what did past Brian, where was his brain going? And we can just like delete that out and forget about where we came from. And it's nice to be able to like go back and see where your thought process was. And are you plot out your stories, or are you more of a go with the flow writer?
I am a go with the flow. I think I had an idea of where I wanted this novel to go, and the novel that I had in my head that I wanted to write is not the one that I ended up writing.
Interesting.
I just kind of I might have an idea of where a scene is going to end. But I still will just write by the seat of my pants and see where it leads.
I mean, are the characters leading you, or is the plot leading you?
Mainly the characters,
That's so
I mean,
fascinating.
I think I know where the plot wants to go. Like I have a destination of where I think it's going to get to, and that'll change half a dozen or 50 times before I get to the end. And scenes will be like that too. I think I'm writing toward a particular point in the scene, a particular arc that I think I wanted to finish with. But the way the characters move, it they kind of change the direction sometimes.
Yeah, I understand that. That makes sense. That's interesting. Like I've talked to, I keep moving around my apartment because if it sounds like I'm moving around a lot, it's because I have two cats that are stalking me, and then I have the lawnmower going outside, and then there was sirens, and I was just like, okay. So I keep like moving around with my computer around my apartment, and I'm like, I wonder if they can hear all this, but
I haven't heard any of it.
It's funny. It's like I'm like dancing around my apartment right now, and I'm like, but I don't want to lose the Wi-Fi signal. Yeah, I think that I've talked to a lot of writers, and they talk about the characters leading them, and I'm a little jealous. Like it would be interesting to kind of see what the characters are, where they want to lead the story. And I mentioned to you before we recorded this podcast, my father passed away about a week ago, and I'm writing a book to him. Like I'm writing letters to him and kind of unpacking our relationship. And I'm about almost at 3,000 words of this.
Oh, that's fantastic. What a
And
sweet idea.
and it's also like it's funny because there's grief there, and we knew it was coming. It was he had pancreatic cancer, and He passed really quickly, as I mentioned to you, Brian,
Yeah, I'm
peacefully
so
and
sorry.
painfully. I'm very grateful that he went the way he did, because he was going to go. It was inevitable. But writing this book to him, he's kind of becoming, because I'm asking questions like, Dear Pops, and I'm working through questions and things that I wasn't able to ask him, or that are still unresolved between us. Well, for me anyway, he's pretty resolved, you'd say. But he's becoming like this mythological character. Like, he's becoming this character that is like leading this story. So it's almost like that's about as close as I could come to like having a character lead something you're writing. So it's really interesting. I'm so curious to see where our relationship goes, because I'm going to do it for a year and
Oh, how
see.
neat.
I know, right? Just to like see what uncovers in this, because it's very like, I'm going with the flow, as you are, other than like the format of it being a letter. And it's funny because I'll write a letter to him, but then there'll be like a PS, and then there'll be a PPS, and then there'll be a PPS. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna. But it's funny because the writer brain is so funny, because I'm already like putting it into the format of a book, and it's like, your father passed away a week ago, and you're like already planning this book. It's just so funny being a writer. We do what we can, like we find inspiration. I mean, the lottery guy. I love that you have this guy protesting the lottery, and then he's inspired this book that you've been working on for like 6 or 7 years.
I know, and I love what you're doing with your relationship with your father and what you're writing about. I think that'll be it's got to be so cathartic to sit down and work with that every day.
Yeah, it's also interesting because it's very complex. Like, and it isn't just about grief, but as I mentioned, he was a stifled. He thought he wanted to be a writer at one point, but he never shared that with me. I found that in some letters in his apartment. Like, just there's stuff that we don't, he's a man of a certain generation. He was 79. He was surprised he was crying at the end. Like, there's just all these things that we can kind of unpack about our culture just through this narrative of communicating with my father. So I'm really excited, to explore this. But that's what it makes me feel, kind of like what a prose writer would feel like, exploring characters,
Just letting it go where it leads you.
letting it go. I love that. So what would you tell your younger writer self?
Oh, what a good question. Probably something along the lines of find what works for you. So if that is indeed writing every day, then do that. But if it's not that, that's okay too. I think I'd also say don't worry about time. I was 48 when I got my first book published. Sure, sometimes I wish I'd gotten an earlier start at this writing thing. But then again, I also know that so much of what's in that first book or even the current novel will not be in those books without those 48, now 52 years of experience. Things unfolded the way they were meant to, and I'm okay with that. But I would have assured my younger self that it's okay to not to worry about time. You'll get there.
Well, thank you for saying that to me too, because I'm 48.
Yeah, there you go.
And I'm just starting to send my poetry out. Like, I have 3 books I've done, but I've never really like sent them out. And I've gotten 7 poems published this year, but it's like they're
Oh,
all like,
fantastic.
thank
Congratulations.
you. Yeah, I'm working with some people that are helping me, and I finally found the format that works for me. But it was like, there's always like, did I not? I'm compare. Sometimes you compare yourself to younger writers, and it's like you just everybody has their process, everybody has their time when it's right for them. The goal is to get
Yeah.
you out there, I would say. So tell us, who are some of your famous authors, or and or what are you reading right now?
I'll go with what I'm reading right now. I have a ginormous to read pile, and I'm usually reading
Oh.
two or three books at a time.
Yeah.
Usually I'm reading something related to what I'm working on, so something research related to what I'm working on. I'll probably be rereading some fiction of some sort, a novel typically. And then I'm either reading a graphic novel or a writing craft book as well, that I kind of like to read aside while I'm working on a piece. But right now, because of the novel, like I mentioned, it's kind of heavily influenced or heavily leaning into music and music history. I've been reading a lot of books on the history and influence of music. So right now I've been reading a book called Musicophilia by Oliver Sacks. A book called The Buzzard about WMMS, which is a radio station in Cleveland that it's renowned for pioneering a lot of the album-oriented rock and roll format that came to pass in the 70s and 80s and 90s. I'm reading Dennis Lehane's Small Mercies, which is so very good. And one of his many gifts is just how darn easy he makes writing seem. It's amazing to read his works. I've been reading a graphic novel called The Killer. Back in the day, I did the marketing and sales for the comic book, and it's got a David Fincher directed film coming out soon. So I'm kind of excited to see how this comic book that I helped market, turns into a film. And what else? I just finished reading Amar Towles's The Lincoln Highway, which is just brilliant. It's very narrative points of view, does a lot of what I'm trying to do in my novel. If I can pull off what he does to a tenth of the degree, I'd be thrilled.
How does your job with marketing comic books, is that that's right, that's what you do? How does that inform, does it inform your writing at all?
Not terribly much, no. I mean, and in fact, I haven't really been doing the comic book marketing as often as I do other sales and marketing for a company that I work for. So not a lot of influence there.
Does that translate into even like marketing yourself as a writer? Do you find it challenging to do that, or do you apply some of those tricks? Seems like
Definitely applies. Yeah, I definitely apply some of those tricks that you learn in the industry. Trying to garner reviews, trying to set up interviews, trying to get just people to pick up and give your book a read. All that kind of overlaps.
but you don't find it hard doing it for yourself.
Of course I do, because we're writers. We're writers,
Know.
and we do this thing solitarily, and we don't like to go out in the world and be public about it, but we eventually find ourselves having to do that.
You know, it's like,
So
look at me, look at me after I've been
it's awfully
made.
uncomfortable, and it's
I
awfully
know.
not easy.
It's not easy at all. It isn't easy at all. I totally agree. Yeah. So anyone who out there that's listening that feels that, you're not alone. It's
Totally not alone.
very
Not at all.
unnatural. It's an unnatural, there should be, you know, I guess there is when you get to a certain level where there's people that do that for you, but you're not alone in that feeling of, let me just stay in my cave and write. This is so annoying. It's like the lottery guy. I deserve to have my book out there. I wrote it. So let's get one more question, and then I'd like to hear some of your writing. We would like to hear some of your writing. What would you say is your elevator pitch, or like your lightning strike advice for other writers?
I mean, writing is hard, but it's okay that it's hard sometimes. We can still enjoy the writing process, be our authentic writerly self, but we don't have to be so hard on ourselves about our process or how long it's taking us to do something or anything. Just write and persevere and endure.
I love that. I love that. So let's hear some of your writing.
Okay, I will read the opening chapter from the novel In Progress. So it's kind of its debut.
I love it. Thank you.
Okay, here we go. So yeah, here we are. By we, I mean me, Moses A. Rockovitz, aka Mo Rock, and her, the 14-year-old Ro, which is short for something I am withholding for the time being. We are holding hands. I don't know who started that, me or her, but holding hands is happening in that platonic way, dig? And we must look like Mutt and Jeff or Felix and Oscar or Methuselah and Lamech or Big Chuck and Little John, except, a male and female version of those conditions. By here, I mean Northwood Cemetery, 8 miles north of Philadelphia in the year of our Lord, 1994. Although time, see, now that's a concept I'm not sure I'm all that hip to. In the straightest of arrows, time is past, present, and the potential of future in that order. Time is more or less like the straight line we took from Cleveland to Philadelphia, dig? And yesterday, the past, we were in Cleveland. Upon departure, we headed damn near east on the turnpike. We passed exit after exit, rest stop after rest stop, town after town, and now tombstone after tombstone, all in a relatively straight line, all to arrive in the here-ness of now. But I've been thinking about time, about its linear nature, and I'm wondering, you see, how linear is time? My memories feel like my past, that they came before now. They are orderly. If I were to create a timeline of my life, it would map without divergence in a straight line. It'd even be causal, dig? I did X and Y happened. Or I awoke at 3 a.m. every day, went to work, spun some records, spoke some words, filled the air with the pattering waves of my voice, transmitted that and music across distances, felt connected to people of all ages, races, creeds, religions, and ethnicities. I once made a timeline of music, of rock and roll. It ringed my apartment, ceiling to floor. Hundreds and hundreds of lined 8x10 small box graph paper taped to the walls, starting with 1922, the first time rock and roll appeared in a record. The straight line circled my room, all of it marked at intervals with dates and events, song and album releases, concerts and shows, bands forming and bands breaking up. So yeah, linear. It's always felt linear. And I get my contradiction, a straight line circling. My room isn't straight, I guess, but I had space restriction, dig? Stretch that timeline out and it's as straight as East 9th Street. But here's the trippy rub. I don't think it is. Straight, I mean. Time, I'm thinking, is a giant ball of crumpled thread. There is no past, no present, no future. Time is tenseless. Time overlaps. My past, Rose's past, are happening now, in this moment. And our future, while unknown to the two of us walking in the cemetery looking for two unmarked graves, it too is happening now. Every point of past, present, future on that mashed together ball of thread is part of itself and the other. This present, hell, the very moment of my thinking, this present is past. You could say I even pictured this moment. A week ago, when we planned this 8-hour road trip to find Rose's namesake, I saw us here. Future was in the present, which is now in the past, if we look at it linearly, that is. To me, though, I think it's all happening at once. And music, my timeline of rock's history, that's wrong. Music happened past tense. It is happening present tense. It will happen future tense. But time, as I've said before, and I now realize I might sound like I'm having a bad trip, is tenseless. This artist learned from that artist. This guitarist learned licks from that guitarist. This one channeled that one who channeled another one who. Music, you know, you have to know, is a grand unifying and mystical instrument that does not know time. So-and-so artist, let's call her she, recorded that song at a certain time. I get my own irony there and place. She presumably was living when she recorded it. She may be alive when you heard it or not. But if you're touched by that song, that beat, that sound, those lyrics, it doesn't matter if you hear it now or 500 years from now, because brother, it can take you out of yourself and into the endless ocean of transcendental time. That movie, can't think of the name, but it just came out with the Bill and the Ted and the Excellent Adventure. That movie gets it, right? Music is timeless and can fix all time. I am still holding Rose's hand, a young girl I both didn't know existed a few months ago, and who I knew existed all the time. She tugs my arm a bit, urges me to walk faster. She releases my hand and starts signing so quickly, her excitement obvious, I am barely picking up every other word. And as time folds in and on itself, I'm reminded about the events that led us here to this past, present, future here-ness of what may or may not be our now and what may or may not be our future. But I'm ahead of myself. There's a joke there. I think a Carnac the Magnificent type envelope revealing joke, but it escapes me right now. Another time, perhaps, or the same time. Raindrops fall. I think I hear a song making its way to me, someone's porch radio or passing stereo, or my own musical mind brings me Ray Charles and his percussive shouting and what I'd say, and I'm looped back to the beginning. Or is it the end? So stick with me. Don't touch that dial. I'm going to be telling my part. Ro will be telling hers. And we'll all meet again soon in this here-ness of the big now.
Oh my goodness, I'm hooked.
All right, I like that. I
love the way your brain works. Oh my God, I'm so in it. I was like, and I'm so feeling it, like with my dad passing and like him coming into my dreams, and it's like all interwoven, like Oh my goodness. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for the kind appreciation.
Oh my, it's so interesting because you have a very calming voice, but then when you stepped into that character, it's like you became him, and it was like so interesting to see the difference, the change. Like, oh
Very neat.
goodness.
Thank you. Thank you.
Congratulations. Thank you for sharing that, the
Yeah,
debut.
the
And I'm so
debut.
excited to like read more of your work. And thank you so much, Brian, for like letting us go into your brain.
You're so welcome. Thanks so much for having me. Again, I just
Yeah, your
appreciate
writer
the,
brain.
yeah, I appreciate the chance to just talk to you about writing and what we're working on. And I'm excited for what you have, what you're working on.
It's cool because Brian was a guest host during COVID when we did it, when we did originally did typewriter talks. So it's so always so cool to like revisit people several years later and see where they're at with their writing. And I think your other book had just been published or was about to be published.
I think it had just been published, and it's funny. I think back, I'm almost positive the quote unquote advice I gave was to write every day back then.
That's so funny.
So 3, 4 years later, I've revised that
Yeah.
advice.
We're always growing and changing as writers and humans. So
Yeah.
thank you, Brian. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this episode of Typewriter Talks. If you want to know more about Keep St. Pete Lit, we are celebrating our 10th anniversary. You can go to keepstpetelit.org. And if you like what you hear, please consider donating to help continue this programming. And we will be back next Thursday with another writer or poet. And thanks for tuning in. And until then, please continue to read and write on.
Typewriter Talks features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. It is hosted by Maureen McDowell, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. Listen in to hear discussions on all kinds of writerly topics. Our goal is to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Learn more about Keep St. Pete Lit at www.keepstpetelit.org.